We will talk about a demographic shift that is increasingly affecting public schools, where students of color now outnumber white students in some districts, including the Milwaukee suburb of Brown Deer, which is minority majority. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, June 16th. We are going to look at how this new demographic reality is affecting students, teachers, administrators, and society at large as we look at race in America's public schools. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences. Do you live in a school district where students of color now make up the majority? What challenges does this pose? What opportunities does this pose? How are you responding to them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sarah Carr, editor of the Teacher Project at Columbia Journalism School and collaborator on Tomorrow's Test, a week-long series on Slate which looks at challenges, tensions, and opportunities as the United States shifts to a majority-minority student population in its public schools. And we will talk with her about her piece, Will They Stay or Will They Go? Suburban districts are getting browner. Will the white families stay? We've also posted this piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here, Joy.
Thanks very much, Sarah, for being with us. Let's start with Brown Deer. The school district of Brown Deer, a suburb of Milwaukee, which in recent years shifted to majority-minority status. Describe the school or the school district for us.
Yes. Well, I mean, Brown Deer is it's a small, close-knit community, and it's an inner ring suburb, meaning that it's adjacent to Milwaukee, and there were a lot of people in Brown Deer who told me that they were drawn to the community and its school system partly because of the diversity. And so in 2008, the district made that switch to majority children of color in the public schools. And school officials say there was this initial wave of white families and some middle-class families of color who left and went to private schools or other suburban school districts. And that continues to some extent, but I think that the good and encouraging news is that it's slowed down considerably. And for the last few years, the overall demographics in the district have not changed that much, and at least for now, the community seems like it's maintaining that diversity that drew a lot of people there originally.
Interesting. Well, but what is the concern if more white or middle class families moved their children to private schools or wealthier suburbs?
You know, of course, there's nothing wrong with that on the face of it. But we just have a history in this country of when there are significant levels of white and middle class flight and you have communities that become overwhelmingly low income, and or people of color, there's less resources for those communities. There's more racism and discrimination, directed at those places. There often tend to be lower expectations of low-income teachers from teachers. So it's a tale that's sort of been told over and over again in our cities when schools desegregated in the 1970s to the 1990s, that when they lost that base of middle-class families in particular, they just over time became much, much less supported institutions and places.
Is it fair to say that Milwaukee itself, one of the most, if not the most segregated city in America, that's what happened here, that there was white flight to the suburbs, and now the MPS mm-hmm. is majority students of color?
Yeah, you know, I worked at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and actually covered Milwaukee public schools as my beat between 2002 and 2007. So I've spent a lot of time in that city. And that is true. I mean, there are individual schools within Milwaukee, that are relatively integrated and perform relatively well. But if you look at the district as a whole, most of its schools are heavily low income and enroll mostly children of color. And there is this disconnect that arises, and I think both at the state level and from many wealthier residents of Milwaukee County, there's this tendency to sort of look askance on Milwaukee public schools and just have this attitude that I would never send my kids there. I would never send my kids to this type of school, and that over time leads to less political support and less likelihood in some cases that the schools are going to get the investment that they need to be successful in the long run.
So what, at least at first, what did this minority-majority status mean for the Brown Deer School District? What unique challenges did the district face when this was happening?
You know, I don't think there's any specific challenge that sort of happened right in 2008 when they made that switch. I think that the big challenge that Brown Deer faces, that a lot of school districts across the country face, is just successfully reaching and relating to and educating kids who come from very diverse backgrounds and skill levels. They have families that are considering leaving if their kids can't take really accelerated advanced courses. And they have ones who come in reading and doing math years behind grade level. They have students who are refugees who speak very little English, or refugees or immigrants. And they have students who are writing and reading well above grade level. And I think it's a challenge that they are really committed to addressing to show that they're a district that can serve everybody, that this diversity is a strength rather than an impediment to doing the job that they have to do.
Talk some about how Brown Deer has addressed the challenge of the achievement gap between black and white students.
Yeah, they have, and I mentioned this in the article, but I mean, they still have a lot of work to do, and I think that they would be the first to say that. But the achievement gap figures are narrower and smaller in Brown Deer than in many other Milwaukee County suburbs. There was a statistic that I mentioned in the article that the ACT score gap between black students and white students at their high school they were tied for one other Milwaukee County suburb for having the narrowest gap in 2014. And I think it's, you know, they've started programming that's really aimed at addressing the achievement gap. They have a really, they have extra classes for students who are behind. They have a really robust preschool and early childhood education program that's aimed at getting kids a good start in school. They realized that there were these disparities in school discipline and out of school suspension levels, and they started expanding and developing a character education program and a more restorative approach to discipline in an attempt to make sure that black students in particular weren't spending significant chunks out of school on suspension. So it's something that they've really tackled head on and has said sort of we can and want to do this.
Yeah, and you point out in the article that one change that was made was the school officials looked at, for example, the books that they were asking the kids to read, and they had no books by anyone of color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and they've changed that. I think they've also had training or professional development sessions for their teachers aimed at helping make them more sensitive and aware of students' different cultures and backgrounds and needs. That has been a challenge. You know, there are some teachers that are really open to that, and some that aren't, that just want to sort of continue doing what they've always done, and that's districts across the country.
We will. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about minority-majority schools, including the school district of Brown Deer, a Milwaukee suburb, and talking about what these shifting demographics will mean for the future of public education. And we'll welcome your questions and your concerns or views. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Sarah Carr, who is editor of the Teacher Project at Columbia Journalism School and collaborator on Tomorrow's Test, a week-long series on Slate, which is looking at the challenges, the tensions, the opportunities as the United States shifts to a majority-minority student population in its public schools. And she also wrote a piece as a part of this series on the Brown Deer School District, which is one example of a school district that has gone to a minority-majority status, where students of color now outnumber white students. We're talking about what this will mean for public education. We're welcoming your questions, your own experiences. Do you happen to live in the Brown Deer School District, or a school district where students of color now make up the majority? What unique challenges or opportunities does this pose? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And Sarah Carr also mentioned she was writing about education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for some time as well. Brian on Facebook says, "This can't happen fast enough as far as I'm concerned. Demographic changes will finally bring about an end to white privilege and bring us closer to ending the cancer that is racism." A comment or a response to that, Sarah?
You know, I hope that's true. I don't know that sort of the shift to majority people of color in the United States alone will bring that about. I mean, if you just look at sort of across so many levels, like the wage gap, the wealth gap, the healthcare gap, there's such differentials between the white population and the black and Hispanic populations in this country that I think we have work to do on a lot of levels to end racism and white privilege.
You have been writing about education for a long time. How do you see this shift in student demographics affecting public schools in general?
There are two major ways that it does that we wrote about in this series. One of them is that as the public school population becomes more diverse in different ways, we need to have teachers who are prepared to connect to those kids. And so how do we build more diverse teacher workforces and ones who are equipped to educate kids who are coming from a broad range of backgrounds? And the second is, again, this was sort of central to the question, to the issue in Brown Deer, how do we create and sustain really integrated school environments? Will there be another wave of white and middle class flight to other environments as this switch happens in individual communities? And I think, you know, there's a role for individual family choices in preserving school integration, but there's also a role for kind of broader policy that needs to be considered.
Like what for broader policy?
There's a lot of school districts that have tried to, for instance, do racial assignments to school assignments that are somewhat based on race or socioeconomic status. And there are questions in different places about the legalities of those plans. There's also housing policy. Housing policies play a huge impact on have a huge impact on residential segregation, which is one of the main reasons that our schools are so segregated. So in our story, we very much wanted to focus on people and individuals kind of grappling with demographic shifts and issues surrounding race. But there's a huge policy world and a role for federal and state and local policymakers if they're committed to preserving and building school integration and integrated communities in general.
Remind me, Brown Deer started diversifying in a way with policies that had some busing going on?
Yes. Not entirely, but a good percentage of the initial Black students who enrolled in Brown Deer schools came through the Chapter 220 program, which started in the 1970s and sent children of color into the Milwaukee County suburbs and white students into Milwaukee public schools, and was an attempt to lead to some level of school integration. And that program has been, it's an expensive program. And so it's been threatened time and time again. And it should be noted that Brown Deer no longer participates because it doesn't need to.
Right.
There's a threshold. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is, but it's around a third or 30%. When you reach that level in terms of children of color, you no longer are eligible to participate as a suburb in Chapter 220. And there are a number of suburbs that have already graduated out of the Chapter 220 program and likely will in the coming years. And there are some other Milwaukee County suburbs that in the next decade will no doubt switch as well from overall majority white students to majority students of color.
Yeah, you did mention that for now, Brown Deer is the only Milwaukee suburb where white students do not constitute a majority of the public school population, something not lost on its peers in whiter neighboring districts, some of whom have subjected Brown Deer students to racist taunts at athletic games and other events. What's happening there?
That was something I heard just from several different people, from school administrators and officials in Brown Deer, and also from families, that they just felt like this happened on a really overt level. And I won't repeat the specific racist taunts that they mentioned. And also just on a more subtle level, there was one mother of a Brown Deer high school graduate whose daughter was one of only a couple, if not the only, white students on the girls' track team in high school, and you know, said that they went to a meet and they were accused of stealing a bunch of discuses they didn't steal, and that she just felt like this was very directly connected to the race of the girls on the team. So, you know, I felt like within the Brown Deer community itself, I heard over and over again, you know, that things aren't perfect. It's not like they never have any issues at all, but they felt like people really get along well, and that kids who go through this school district, who go off to much less diverse colleges, come back and say, you know, I really learned so much, and I'm glad that I went to middle and high school in such a diverse community. And so I didn't want to devote too much of that article to talking about issues of racist taunts, but it was something that came up so much that I felt like I at least had to mention it.
We had a caller who called in to say that he was the minority in a mostly Black school and got picked on a lot. Now, I'm assuming this person was white, and I'm not sure where this person went to school. What do the families that you talk to tell you about that? White families, do they think their children get picked on?
I did not hear that specific concern. I mean, I definitely, in 15 years covering education, you definitely see kids getting picked on, but just of all races and backgrounds. But I interviewed a number of white families, and I didn't hear from any of them that they felt like their child was picked on or targeted for bullying, much less because of their skin color. I, for the most part, heard that they felt like students of different races and backgrounds got along. And the most common concern that I heard there from white families was that they were worried about whether there was enough advanced coursework and academic challenge in the Brown Deer schools to keep their kids there through high school. That's not a positive or fun experience for any child to go through. So I have sympathy for him. But when schools desegregated across the country, it's important to remember the context that there was a huge amount of violence directed at the small numbers of black students who were entering predominantly white schools. And so I think it's important to remember that history and sort of the history of school desegregation in general in this country, because it will kind of help us stay aware of sort of the challenges that we continue to face as a nation.
We are talking with Sarah Carr. She is the editor of the Teacher Project at Columbia Journalism School and collaborator on Tomorrow's Test, a week-long series on Slate, which looks at the demographic shifts in our public schools, including the demographic shift in the Brown Deer School District, which is a Milwaukee suburb that is now minority-majority, where the students of color outnumber white students. And we're wondering if you what you think of this trend, what questions or concerns you might have, or what challenges or opportunities you think this poses. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I wanted to share a comment from Ellen on Facebook, who says, "I drive a rainbow of K through fourth grade students to school during the school year. They are so wonderful. They do not see color like older adults do. They embrace their differences, sometimes politely so as to not offend. They compare native languages that are other than English on their way to and from school." Reaction to that? Kids don't think there's anything different or weird about this at all.
Yes, yeah. You know, I mean, I think like racism is in a lot of cases a taught or a learned behavior, and a lot of times kids or young adults are picking up what they learn from their elders, but this isn't something that they're born with or that has to be. And you know, I had a similar experience when I went into a Brown Deer kindergarten classroom, and they had to find reading buddies. And I just looking at with the high number of Hispanic and Asian and white and black kids in that classroom, I don't think that there were any two kids who had a buddy from the same racial or ethnic group as they were from. And it is really uplifting to see that and to see this open exchange of ideas and cultures happening across any age group. But of course, there's something particularly inspirational about seeing it in our kind of very, very youngest, kind of most open-hearted citizens.
Yeah. A caller wondered if poverty plays a role in this shift.
I really think it does. And our series as a whole focused more on race than it did issues of class. But they are also really important to talk about and keep in mind. And in Brown Deer, there's racial diversity across socioeconomic levels. So you've historically had a fair number of low-income Black residents and middle-income Black residents and low-income white residents and middle-income white residents. And there were some families I talked to who felt like preserving socioeconomic diversity was key, that if the district became more and more low-income, there would be flight of middle and upper middle-income families of all racial backgrounds, and that you know, that it wasn't just sort of white families that had considered leaving, but also a good number of middle-income Black families. And that's where I think they're really, we need to have sort of a broader look at housing policies and whether or not those are fair. You know, there are certain communities and neighborhoods that have higher numbers of subsidized and low-income housing, and that can lead to a form of segregation based on income level that can cause our schools as well to become segregated.
You know, the your piece, will they stay or will they go? It sounds like, at least for now, meaning will the white families stay or will they go? At least in Brown Deer, at first they started to go, but now they are staying?
Yeah, I mean, that seemed to be the trend. I mean, it's a small community, so the impact of just a very small group of families can have a real difference on the demographics of the schools. And the numbers of white and middle income families do continue to inch down, but they're inching down. They're not plummeting. So it's, you know, I really felt like there was a lot of cause for optimism there, but that only time would tell. There's a researcher who focuses on diversifying suburbs, whose data has found that communities like Brown Deer have a very hard time staying integrated beyond a decade or two. And I think that three of the things they have working in their favor are they have a lot of families who were drawn to that community because of the diversity. They have school officials who really are devoted to preserving it and meeting kids where they are. And they have a lot of diversity of socioeconomic status in addition to race, which gives them a core group of middle-income families in the district.
Yeah, this stood out to me in the piece where a former principal of the Brown Deer High School, Jim Pyatt, said the biggest challenge with the Browning of America is white folks accepting that they don't need to be in the majority. And then he says something about staying in Brown Deer as a white family certainly is not as risky as being the first Black family on a block. But in essence, saying, hey, white families stay?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that I think that is a really core, you know, if provocative quote. Like, I think not thinking of Brown Deer specifically, but I think there is a lot of there's a lot of issue with white families not wanting their kids to be in the minority and just not wanting to give up a lot of the power and control that they've experienced throughout the history of this country, and that's going to be an issue for individuals and for society as a whole as this shift happens in more and more places. You know, the shift to majority people of color happened first in the schools, but most demographers predict that it will happen in the country as a whole within the next generation. And then you're going to have a whole range of institutions that are going to be dealing with the same issues. And, you know, we can't sort of succeed as a country in the long term if there continue to be these worst outcomes and indicators on a whole bunch of levels for the groups that make up the majority in the country.
We are talking about the implications of this trend, which is exemplified in the school district of Brown Deer, a suburb of Milwaukee, where students of color now outnumber white students, the minority-majority trend. What do you think? What questions do you have? We'll check news and then we'll be back. Will they stay or will they go? Suburban school districts are getting browner. Will the white families stay? That's the title of a piece written by our guest about the Brown Deer School District and how the Brown Deer School District has become minority-majority, where students of color outnumber white students. And this is a demographic shift that is affecting schools all over the nation. And we're talking about what this means, the implications of this. We're welcoming your questions about this. We're wondering if I'm wondering if you think the white families will stay or will they go? Will white families go to a private school rather than being in a school where they are the minority? Will white families instead go to a wealthier, whiter suburb instead of Brown Deer, for example? What do you think this will mean for the future of public education? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sarah Carr, editor of the Teacher Project at Columbia Journalism School and collaborator on Tomorrow's Test, a week-long series on Slate, which looks at the challenges, tensions, and opportunities as the United States shifts from a majority-minority student population in its public schools. Well, there we go. I was asking earlier if anybody lived in a school district where students of color now make up the majority, or if anybody lived in Brown Deer. Nobody was calling, so now somebody did. I'm so happy. Amy in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Amy.
Good morning. Good morning. My family and I moved to Brown Deer because of the racial diversity. I'm a white parent, but I have a biracial daughter who attends the Brown Deer School District, and I'm happy with her experience there. And I want to say that when I am in Brown Deer, I feel at home. When I go home to visit my family of origin up north, I don't feel as at home. I look around and I see lots and lots of pretty much all white faces. And when I come back to Brown Deer, I feel relaxed. I feel like I'm back in my home. Mm-hmm. And I think my daughter feels that way too.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear it. And thank you for calling. How do you think, what do you think of the quality of education your daughter is getting?
I think that she is challenged in the way that she needs to be. So she is able to take, because of the middle high school setup, she's an eighth grader, but she does take a couple advanced classes. Her teachers have always been there to meet her where she is. And as a parent who has volunteered in the district, more often in the elementary school when my schedule allowed, I saw how the teachers were meeting the students who needed additional assistance in terms of meeting getting to where they needed to be in terms of improving some of their skills, and then for the students that needed to be challenged. And I think the teachers in that district work really hard to do that for all of the students.
Do you have any concerns, Amy, that white families are going to move out because they feel strange being in the minority?
Not my friends. I feel like I have a somewhat diverse group of friends in Brown Deer, and we actually have a group that gets together on a fairly regular basis, and we're pretty happy where we are. We would not move. That would not be one of the reasons that anybody that I've talked to would leave the district.
Well, that's good to know. A reaction, Sarah?
I just want to thank Amy for calling in and for her comments, and I feel like that a lot of the sentiments that she expressed were ones I heard from a number of families when I was reporting there that fall, both particularly the sentiment that the diversity of the community across a lot of different levels was part of what drew them to Brown Deer and to the school system initially, and also to the idea that the school district was really trying as hard as it could to meet kids at different levels, as challenging as that can be at times.
Thank you very much, Amy, for the call. Let's go next to Rich in Shawano. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. What's your thought?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic I have, and I just came across this a month ago. I've actually seen the after effects in both situations. But I have two friends from very prominent, wealthy families, and one friend and his wife years ago when the children were younger, actually moved out of a private school district in Minneapolis to another area with more diverse culture at another school area. And they were very liberal-minded people, musicians, and that's what they wanted. And both children are now 23 and 25, and they're doing quite well, but they're doing quite well in the music. The other family, my friend I've known since he was 17, he did just the opposite, and he took his family and moved them to a private, almost gated community, but their school district is opened up to urban construction, or whatever you want to call it, and now he's getting ready to move because he doesn't want his child to have any influences that might go along with problems that are with a diverse community. Mm-hmm. So I understand both sides of the equation. I don't, you know, it's just what it is.
Sarah?
I think one thing that, you know, that we haven't talked about is that there is a good amount of research showing the value of school integration for all kids. It's particularly valuable for low-income kids, and it's particularly important that they not be in schools that are overwhelmingly low income. But there are benefits to everyone. It's parents. There was one parent I talked to and quoted in the story. He said, "You know, your kids are only young ones, and so it's hard to be judgmental of a decision that any parent makes on behalf of their child. That's really kind of weighed the evidence and is trying to do the best they can. But I think it's important to keep in mind that kids are going to be entering a really diverse world once they leave school, whether or not they attended diverse schools or not themselves. And qualities like empathy have always been important and really are important today as our country becomes increasingly diverse.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the future. What is the thought of how this is going to affect public education in general?
One big issue that I think I've noticed just as an education reporter has come up again and again just in the last 2 years is this question of teacher diversity and the lack thereof in a lot of different places. The public school student population is now about 51%, and by 2045, the country as a whole will be. The teacher corps has stayed much more stagnant and is about 80% white now. It's there are white teachers who do a wonderful job connecting with children of color. But there's also just a problem if there's that degree of disconnect. And if students are never seeing people who look like them, and come from a similar background in positions of authority in the schools and outside the schools, that can be really problematic. So I think there are a lot of school districts across the country, including some in Wisconsin, that are really grappling with this issue of how can we attract and keep a teacher workforce that's more diverse than what we have currently.
Yeah. How do you see this issue playing out in politics?
In politics, I mean, there's a lot of people who make the argument that Trump the success that Trump has had in the Republican primaries is related to this shift and to this rise in what's been described as white identity politics, as some white people become more and more fearful of becoming the new minority. So it might take different kind of contours depending on what local community that you're talking about, but I do think there is some connection between these demographic shifts. And if you look at the way that Trump has played on issues surrounding immigration and issues surrounding race, I think he is kind of playing off of this demographic shift and tapping into some people's fear.
Yeah. What levels of society do these problems need to be tackled? How do we approach these various issues with public institutions?
You know, one thing I think it's important is just to keep in mind that they always need to be tackled at both the personal and the policy level. We can't get the kind of change that we need by just focusing on one or the other. We need policies that promote tolerance and empathy and integration, but we also sort of all of us as people need to do the hard work of. At times hard work of staying open-minded and curious and empathetic, because if we just attack it sort of by expecting people to change or expecting policies to change, I don't think it's going to be good for the country in the long run.
Yeah, what happens if we as a society hesitate or remain passive in this?
I think that our schools will struggle more and more, and that we'll struggle more and more as a country, and really lose a lot of what's good and positive about being an American.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Joy.
Sarah Carr, editor of the Teacher Project at Columbia Journalism School, a collaborator on Tomorrow's Test, a week-long series on Slate which looks at challenges, tensions, and opportunities as the United States shifts to a majority-minority student population in its public schools. And her piece, Will They Stay or Will They Go, on the Brown Deer School District, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to producers Marika Suval, to Naeja Ellison, and to Brianne Chasso, and to Elizabeth Deliquest. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.